You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
All righty. Here we go again. Happy hump day, everybody, and welcome back to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. Today, we are joined by Jesse Fatterishan out of Northeast Pennsylvania, and this is a good old-fashioned BS session, man. We talk about how he got into hunting. We talk about how he kind of learned from his father, who was doing the run-and-gun type method of hunting for a long time before it was popular, and we talk about how that kind of rubbed off on him, and it's just a good old-fashioned BS session about a hunter out of northeastern Pennsylvania who hunts high-pressured ground, hunts some private ground, and I tell you what, it's a fun podcast, man. I had an absolute blast talking with Jesse today, and funny thing is, he is from Scranton, and Scranton is home of the show The Office. I'm sure most of you are aware of that, but that's where he lives, and that's where he calls home, and that's where he hunts. Now, before we get into today's podcast, we got a couple things. We got a commercial coming up, obviously, but I am getting ready to, later this week, launch a new Nine Finger Chronicles vlog, and you can find that on the Sportsman's Nation YouTube channel. All you got to do is search Sportsman's Nation or Nine Finger Chronicles, and it should pop up. Once you do that, please subscribe, right? Subscribe to the Sportsman's Nation YouTube channel. There is a lot of great content that's being put up there on a weekly basis. We got my man Bob Polanek of Hybrid Outdoors. He is putting up a ton of steelhead fishing videos. If you live where there's steelhead fishing, you know that's a big popular thing to do. He's out of Michigan, and he's definitely hitting the waters right now fishing for steelhead. We got my man Parker McDonald down south, and he's putting up some southern ground vlogs on the Sportsman's Nation YouTube channel, and he just recently killed a turkey, so go check out that vlog. And then I just caught probably three of my top 15, top 10 biggest bass of all time, and I made a vlog about it. And that's going to be up really soon, so go check that out on the YouTube channel as well. Last but not least, this podcast is brought to you by Wasp Archery. Now, you guys know I'm a huge fan of Wasp, their company, their customer service, their products, right? And I'm telling you what, they make some kick-ass broadheads. They have the mechanicals, but I'm a huge fan of their fixed blades, especially the Wasp 4-blade, or the Boss 4-blade is what it's called, and you can go to wasparchery.com and check out all of their products. But they have a new product this year called the Havilon. Now, what they did is Wasp teamed up with Havilon Knives, and they created this badass broadhead. It's a fixed blade called the Havilon, of course. So check, look out for that. I believe it's a 3-blade. Yeah, it's a 3-blade broadhead, and they're trying to talk me into using it this year. I don't know, because I'm in love with the Boss 4-blade. We'll see what happens. If you want to save 20% on your broadheads, go to wasparchery.com and enter the discount code 9fingers. That's the number 9, followed by the word fingers, and you'll save 20%. Now, we've done a lot of talking, and if you're not subscribed to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, all you got to do is go to iTunes, search Nine Finger Chronicles, all spelled out, right? The number 9, or the word 9, fingers, or 9 finger. God, I'm screwing up my own promo here. Nine Finger Chronicles. Subscribe to it. And guys, we are going to be giving away a prime bow here pretty soon. More details to come on that, but make sure you're paying attention, because I want you guys to win a prime bow, man. So pay attention to that. All right, I talked too much. Let's get into today's BS Session podcast with my man, Jesse. All right, I'm on the phone right now with Jesse Fatterishan. How you doing, man?
Good. How's it going, Dan?
Oh, not too bad. Not too bad. Sunshine in Iowa today, so I couldn't be more happy.
Yeah, same thing here. I'm in Scranton, PA, Northeast PA here. It's home of the famous show, The Office.
My wife loves that show.
Okay, there we go.
So, do they actually film that show in Scranton?
I don't think primarily. They were here a few times, I know. It's, of course, a massive deal here when it does happen, when they do come by.
Yeah.
But as far as filming, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure not so.
Do they have a lot of, like, tourist attractions for The Office in that town?
Not so much tourist attractions. When they come, they'll do like a mini convention.
Ah, I got
some of the hotels downtown. It's like literally like a, it's insanity, pure insanity.
I believe it. It's a very popular television show. I mean, I got invited to go to this thing one time in the bar, in like local bars. They have something called a trivia night, and
okay. So
then they go and they ask questions about that show. So like, you get a team of people, and then whoever has the highest score at the end of the night wins some kind of prize or a tab or whatever. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. And that's Scranton, PA. Put this little old town on the map.
That's right. So what do you do for a living in Scranton?
I'm a route driver for a uniform company and linen supply, Dempsey Uniform and Linen here in the region.
Okay, so you pick up dirty clothes, take it back someplace, get it washed or whatever, and then you take it back?
Yep, sure do. That, even mats, like runner mats in and out of restaurants,
yep.
Towels,
yep.
Aprons, the whole gamut, really.
Yep, absolutely. Cool, man. Awesome. So I take it that keeps you busy.
Yeah, sure does.
On
sure
the
does.
Road a
luckily,
lot.
Luckily for me, it's a four-day, four tens I do. So
okay.
That off day comes in handy in bowl season.
Yeah, absolutely it does. So I take it you're on the road a lot, listening to a lot of podcasts.
Oh, there you go, man. You nailed it. Sure. And I think I've learned more from podcasts in the last 2 years from you and Mark and the guys than I learned my 30 years prior to that, really.
Yeah. Absolutely. There's a lot of good information out there, that's for sure, that there wasn't, you know, several years ago. But today, we're going to do a little bit of a hunter profile podcast and just kind of BS with you a little bit about hunting in Pennsylvania and whatnot. So the first question that I'm going to go right all the way back to the beginning. When were you introduced to hunting?
For me, it was literally day one. My dad is a lifelong hunter. He, right from the start, I was hunting. I have pictures of me, well, not hunting, but interested in hunting,
right,
and around hunting. You know, I have pictures that I'm 4 or 5 years old, standing proud next to the archery target in the backyard.
Nice.
And for me, it was my whole life. So when I hunted, you know, nowadays in PA, there's some programs, great programs, mentored youth hunts, where the age is maybe 6 or 7, you can go with a licensed adult and go hunting. But back then it was, you're waiting until you're 12 years old for your hunting, period.
Yeah.
So by the time that came, I was like, walking into the stand for the first time ever, that first day of archery, I was literally nauseous, like almost vomiting. Like, it was the build up. I think about it now, it was literally the build up for 12 years. I bet a lot of guys in here are laughing right now because it was my whole life until then.
Right.
And now the day had finally come, you know?
Right. So were you able to go out and sit with your dad and, you know, while he hunted, or were kids not allowed in the woods?
The legality that I'm not aware of, but we didn't do that. I actually don't think that was allowed as far as I know, but we would go scouting, you know, preseason, I would be able to sit with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, sight and rifles and do archery practice, stuff like that. But at that time, no, there was no accompanying rules like that. I don't think so.
Gotcha. Okay. So for 12 whole years, you were interested in hunting, you know, and you didn't get the opportunity to hunt until that time. And it sounds like the buildup was almost unbearable. So I don't know, the first time you ever saw a deer when you were 12, did you about pass out or what?
It was on that level. It was definitely on that level. It was like my 20th hunting season last year, which is a pretty cool milestone. But yeah. I think back to that. Now here I am that first day. I finally make it up in the stand to go to old wooden built tree stand.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
So I get in there and it's just me. My dad was going up. He was actually doing a hang and sit. He was doing that. His friends thought he was totally insane.
Right.
That he would go with his old lock-on tree stand, which was actually a stand ahead of its time now that everybody's with these light stands, mobile stands.
Right.
He went up above me about 300 yards. So I get set, and it's, you know, it's coming to light, and I'm like hanging on by a thread at this point, you know? And the first deer I see comes out about 80 yards down below me, coming out of the field, is this brute of a six-pointer. But, like, even by today's, like, a shooter, really.
Yeah.
He comes out of the field, goes right across now, but it's 80 yards down below me. But I saw that, and that was like, wow, like perfect experience to have.
Yeah.
Later on in that sit, I saw two other bucks locking horns, and then two more young bucks, all out of range. But I saw five bucks on my first sit, and I didn't need anything extra, but that sent me over the edge for hunting. That was it, man. I was in beyond him.
And you didn't even get a chance to shoot him or kill anything, but it was that experience that where you went out the first time solo, you were by yourself, you were 12, and that experience right there pretty much concreted your position as a hunter.
Yeah, no question about it. If I didn't know, now you know, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's awesome, man. So, as a kid, I mean, preparing for your first season because you couldn't hunt previous to that, like, what kind of responsibilities or tests or things did you have to do before that hunting season to prove that you were, you know, ready to go hunting?
Oh, absolutely. In Pennsylvania, there is a hunter safety course.
Yep.
We went to that, and the way they did it was, like, the first day was, like, literally like 12 hours, I think.
Yeah.
Sitting through classwork, scenarios, situations, the whole nine yards. Then the second day you take your written exam. And truthfully, from all the huntings, I just watched every monster buck, every prime time, the whole deal. I wish they had an option. Like, can I test out of this bad boy? Cause I would have just flew through that. Just give me the exam. I'm not ready. But it's a good thing. They do have the hunter safety, and that is a requirement.
Yeah.
Before your first license in PA.
Yeah. Yeah. Just out of curiosity, how old are you?
Right now I'm 33.
33. Okay. Gotcha. So, you had to go through hunter safety course, you know, just like a lot of us had to, but what about your dad? Was your dad sitting there? Was he the one who was teaching you how to shoot the gun, teaching you about yardage and distance and all that stuff?
Oh yeah. 100%. 100%. My dad's my mentor still to this day. And he actually had a great video. It's something guys should think about nowadays. It was from Buckmasters. It was called Taking Your Best Shot. And what that video was analyzing angles of the deer and where you need to aim and giving the examples of, okay, if the deer was walking, you shoot, by the time your arrow would get there, you're, you know, in the paunch, we'll say,
yeah,
and drop. And that was a thing like that. I watched that video more than any of the other videos. That was what he wanted me to do. And I, thinking back now, that was awesome.
Yeah.
And we kept watching every that was like a ritual then for years to come after that. We would, before archery, let's just watch this, just, you know, do some homework here. But that was really a great thing.
Yeah. Yeah, just kind of a refresher before you actually go out and hunt. Like, here are the vitals. And sometimes kids need that because, you know, I'm quickly learning that kids need to have those kind of refreshers because kids aren't very good listeners, and they forget things that aren't necessarily in front of them every single day. So definitely that would be a perfect reminder.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. That was on old VHS, so eventually that ran its course, that video. But I think we do need something like that out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what about bow hunting? Was that always a part of your guys's family tradition as well? Or did you start off as a rifle hunter and then, like the rest of us, kind of evolve into archery?
No, not for me. I was fortunate to be bow hunter from the start. That was my first sit was an archery sit. And later that year, I was fortunate to harvest a young button buck and with the rifle.
Gotcha.
So it was amazing getting that deer. It was on a small little deer drive. My dad and I were sitting in the same little wooden tree stand. I don't know how we got into it. That buck came through. I got him. But my first thought after that is, man, I can't wait for bow season next year. I got to get it done with the bow.
Yeah. So you actually started out when you were 12, you started out bow hunting. And then, you know, as the year went on, you also were, you were also a rifle hunter as well then.
Right. Yeah. The way PA season is, it's about 6 weeks of archery.
Gotcha.
That goes out in the second week in November, the end of that week. And then rifle comes in around December 1st. And that's just a 2 week season, the centerfire rifle season.
Gotcha.
At that time, there is now an inline doe season in the third week of archery. And in that time, the youth hunters can use a centerfire rifle.
Gotcha.
But back then, man, if you didn't get one in bow, here we go. It's time for rifle.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So, how hard was it for you if you can remember back to when you were 12, you to pick up a bow and start to be accurate with it? Was it something that your dad preached and preached? Hey, man, if you want to be a good bow hunter, you got to be good with the bow.
Yeah, no, that was one of the number one things as well, is that if you're going to be going out with an archery equipment, you better be ready to kill this animal and be very ready, you know, for the respect of the animal even.
Yeah.
So that was the thing. Like, anytime we can, man, we were out there, you know, flinging arrows for sure.
Yeah. So it sounds to me like your dad was on top of his game as far as, you know, not only educating you about the weapons, but also educating you about the animal as well. Did he sit down and have conversations with you also about strategy, where deer like to live, where they like to bed and where they eat and all that stuff?
So that's the thing now where I think that's where I've now taken my game to the next level, you know, recently. Back then was like, we knew runways for sure. You know, we knew where deer were eating, but bedding and stuff like that wasn't something we actually even really thought about much, was bedding area.
Yeah.
We knew deer like to come by here, but not necessarily why they came by there.
Right. Right. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. So as you got older, right, and you started to, you know, be a little bit more self-sufficient in the woods, maybe even getting into school. And then I'll just use my experience as an example, you know, sports became a little bit more of a priority for me. You know, trying to impress the ladies became a little bit more of a priority for me. Did you go that route, or did you stay the hunting route?
That's funny you asked that. That next year, now when I was 13, I was starting to do football and stuff more. But I had known, I'm like, look, I want to get this done with the ball. I enjoy that season much more. You're seeing deer and their natural moving patterns. Not pushed, not looking over their shoulder, not barreling through the woods. This rifle season here in PA is literally just almost all out mayhem with the amount of hunters that is going on. But
yeah.
So that next year, archery came, and I was hunting hard religiously. I'd been shooting my bow. Everything was dialed in. It was about the third week. We had I'm thinking back now, it was like 15 degrees below the average temperature.
Yeah.
There was no wind. there wasn't a cloud in the sky. So all these things are, I'm connecting the dots back then to now that it was a beautiful high pressure day is what it was.
Yeah.
And below that average temperature, it's the day we're all looking for, you know?
Yep.
And back then I don't use it at all now, but I was using a Dolan heat scent.
Yep.
Old Ben Rogers Lee one. My dad had put that out. He had gotten his buck the week before, a nice 7-pointer with the ball. So he set me up. We're in another wooden tree stand, and I'm sitting there, and that buck, it was a beautiful 7-pointer, just real nice buck. I looked at his side, and he's coming on a straight line with his nose up directly at that doe and heat. So I anticipated him coming down below me where the run was. So I'm set up on that side of the tree. Well, he comes up on the above me, so I have to come around, and I catch my broadhead on the piece of bark.
Oh,
and
it
rips off a bark and goes down. So he like takes two bounds, but he didn't care. He was looking for that doe.
Right.
He had that in mind, man. He turns around, comes back, pull back, hold right on there, just squeeze it off, man. It's still one of the most perfectly located shots I ever made, and that was my first buck with the bow.
Right.
Double lunged him, man.
And that was at
13. He went down throw.
That was at 13?
13, man, yeah.
So let me ask you this. You know, you shot a deer with a gun the previous year, and now this year you're 13, you shot this buck with a bow, and now it's like what you wanted happened, it came true. Like, how jacked were you when that happened?
The funniest thing too is so we had the old Motorola talk about radio, so I'm calling my dad feverishly. He's hunting fall turkeys about a quarter mile down over, staying out of my way. I can't get a hold. Finally, I get him, and I'm out of my mind by then. I'm still in the tree. He's like, Jess, it all sounds good, but just stay there. Just sit tight. I'm going to come up. I'm going to get there. Then we'll see what we got. Well, so no later that he got off the radio, he's going to listen to this and start laughing. I immediately climbed right down and ran over to where I hit him. So I'm looking around. I'm like, what? Then I saw the blood trail. I'm like, oh my God, I got him. I just scurry back up the stand. And I'm like waiting for my dad at that point. So, you know, he gets there and we begin the blood trail. And then as we're going down, he's getting overwhelmed with emotion. And so am I then. Cause he knows, cause you can see the blood trail, double sides with the bubbles.
Yep. Yep.
He knows it's any second now. And dude, when we saw that deer, it was like, the amount of emotion was indescribable, really. It was total amazing.
Yeah. It's kind of funny when, you know, I don't know if I've necessarily gone through any of that yet with my kids. Like, I get jacked right now. I get excited when my daughter, she's in this reading program because she's fairly good at reading for her age, and she's reading these books to me on a nightly basis, and I get jacked when she can read through a book with no mistakes, right? And I get fired up about that. You know, oh, I'm so proud of you. That's awesome. But reading's a little bit different than like my passion, which is bow hunting. So I know that the time I took my wife out and she shot her first turkey with a gun, I was almost more excited for her to shoot that turkey than I ever had been for shooting my own turkey. And so I can see how a parent would just get overwhelmingly excited when their son or daughter takes their first deer, especially with a bow, you know?
No, absolutely. And I'm a newer father. My daughter Liviana is going to be 2 in May. And my wife Alyssa and I, like, you're just saying just the small feats at this point. Like, we're just taken aback, almost near tears. So again, someday, like you're saying, if my daughter takes to hunting and that first harvest happens, I can only imagine, Dan, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So where did it go from there? I mean, as you got into high school, did you still put as much effort into hunting, or did you go into the sports and whatnot?
Yeah, so that's tying back to where we started before. Yeah, then the football, the baseball. Football season was always tough because that was during archery.
Right.
So yeah, I wasn't getting enough. I wasn't shooting a bow enough. I wasn't doing the things I need to be done. So unfortunately, I was still hunting, and I did make a bad shot on a deer.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we weren't able to recover. And from that day forward, I'm like, look, that's when I really, I'm like, look, you got to put the time in. And if you can't, you should be responsible enough to know, all right, maybe I shouldn't go with the bow.
Yeah, absolutely. So did you quit bow hunting for a while and only do rifle?
No, that stayed with it, but that immediately that next year,
oh, gotcha.
I started back to religiously shooting a bow. I had corrected my mistake, if you will.
Gotcha.
I, at that time, I switched to a thumb style release, and I was shooting almost daily at that point.
Yeah.
Because actually, I now know that I had always kind of suffered from target panic.
You right.
know, I knew how to shoot a bow. I knew how to hold. I was rock steady. I had all the everything was there. But every time I drew, I'd come set, and for whatever reason, man, I'd be dead set, locked in, not moving 10 inches above where I want to hit.
Yeah.
And then just, it was a mental block. I couldn't lower that pin to the center. It sounds trivial, but I know some guys might have that. I mean, that's target panic.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah. for me, that I would combat that just by shooting as much as possible, trying to work that out of the system. But yeah. What changed everything for me entirely was the day I picked up a back tension release.
Yeah. Right. So how long ago, from an archery standpoint now, how long ago did you pick up a back tension release?
For me, the year, it was 2010. So 9 years ago, roughly around this time before leagues in my local archery shop.
Okay. So talk to me about, cause in this message you sent me through Facebook, you're like, hey, I really want to talk about 3D tournament or 3D shooting and how I feel that helped me out in the woods. And I have a feeling that starting with that back tension style of release really helped you out.
Yeah, that it was an absolute game changer. Yeah, I picked it up. Now, it was a true ball hot tension release. Now, a lot of hinges, you might see a guy at your shop, like it's, the head swivels a lot and it's like banging around a lot and stuff. But this one has a spring in it that holds it closed. So it's dead silent sitting there. So I picked that release up. So I knew the concept of it. I've been reading about it. I've been thinking about it. So I remember right now I pulled that bow back and that pin just settled in dead center, man. And I just squeezed through and I hit dead center. I go, my world just changed. I said, the very first arrow, I never put it down since that very moment.
Nice. Nice. So do you feel, obviously that it helped you out a lot.
Yeah, no question. It literally cured that mental block, that target panic issue. I went immediately ran right into the 3D range at that shop and I'm hitting like exactly where I want. I'm like, it's like laser beaming in like that the very day that it happened. Everybody's warning me like, oh, you're going to eventually get a bloody lip. You'll punch yourself in the face. You'll send it. None of that ever happened. It just, I had known how to use it just by reading.
Right.
Keeping your thumb pressure on when you draw. And it was a total game changer. And then about 3 months later, it was like my first tournament, the PAIBO state championship. And I shot like a 311 with 13 X's. Now, like a 300 would be all 10s. You get that center X ring. Those are 11s. So I was 11 up from all 10s even. Like I won by like 8 points. It was absolutely amazing. It literally, like all the fundamentals were there for me. I had known how to shoot, but the missing piece of the puzzle was that back pincher release.
Gotcha. So, you know, I mean, I've even got criticized on social media and on some of the podcast reviews about people saying that, you know, I don't know, one way or the other, that I need to practice more, right? Because of the shot I put on my buck this past year. So I've already started shooting this year, which, you know, this is about the time where I start shooting anyway, but I've picked up the pace just a little bit more this year and have started to shoot more times a week, more arrows whenever I do shoot. So I want you to give a pitch for people to either maybe join a 3D, not necessarily competition, but maybe a league, join a 3D league or pick up a back tension release. And if you were the salesman on that, I want you to talk to the guys who are listening right now about why they should do that.
Well, absolutely. Now, as you guys heard now, I was an archery hunter my whole life, but things really, I can't stress that enough, really changed when I did go to that back tension. And then especially the 3D. You'll hear a lot of the top guys, the Levi Morgans, John Dudleys, they wanted to become a better hunter. So they started shooting 3D. Now, when you hear a 3D shoot, there's local clubs all around that it's not even a high-stakes tournament that you're doing. You're doing 30 targets through the woods. It's literally an awesome afternoon out anyway. But the thing is, it's not always a high stakes, all the marbles, you know, type situation. And there's different classes. Like I shoot hunter class. I'm not in the open class with 3 foot long stabilizers and 6 power lenses and stuff. There's nothing wrong with that, but that's not my cup of tea. My hunting bow is identical to my 3D bow. The only difference is I use a little fatter arrow for cutting lines that's a little lighter. It's literally the same setup. I think that by going to back tension put me at a high level in 3D, which put me at my highest level as a bow hunter, which was the ultimate goal.
Right.
I go in now with the confidence of when that deer comes up, I get the mindset that I'm a badass and it's over with. I'm going to get it done.
Yeah.
It's literally taken me to that kind of level, which has made me that much more deadly of a bow hunter.
Yeah. That's awesome that you say that, because that's something that I don't necessarily feel I have that, you know, I'm a badass walking into the woods type feel yet. And I think that when a guy doesn't have to worry about his shot anymore, and he's like, it's almost automatic for him because he does practice so much. And he knows that, you know, when something comes through, he's going to get it done. But I look at, you know, 3D target, like what you said, and the deer are always standing broadside. They always are not moving, but you go into the timber and they could be coming from multiple angles. They could be coming from, straight to you, straight away from you, whatever, right? So do you feel that it has that much of effect on you so then when a deer does come in and it's an awkward shot that you still have the confidence to do that?
Absolutely. As you're telling me that, I'm thinking of an exact example in my head of a nice 9-pointer I harvested a few years back with the bow. He came out grunting about 50 yards below me. He's coming right, almost right at me. So as he's coming, I thought he was going to turn up a run and go up to the north a little bit. But before he turns, he stops. I had drawn already because I thought he was going to turn. I wanted to be ready. He stops and just looks directly at me. Now, it's a very, very sharp quartering two angle that he's at. He's quartering to me quite hard. But I knew the yardage because I've been doing that. I'm like, well, it's 25 yards. I know he's looking at me, and I'm right on him. And I'm putting it right there, baby, and I'm going to let her put it right on him. I did just that, and I just hit exactly where I was aiming. And I think that comes back to what you're saying. Like, I had the confidence in knowing I'm putting that arrow exactly where I want it. And whether that deer's quarter and two away or whatever, what have you, I know I'm going to get it done.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you hunt with your back tension release?
Yeah, that was the big thing too. So when I picked this up and I had tremendous amount of success immediately in the hunter class in 3D. So one of the guys at the pro shop I'm at, I'm like, well, what do you think? Should I hunt with this or should I start messing with a trigger release? He goes, you're shooting great. You know your equipment. Yeah, absolutely. Try hunting. I'm like, yeah, I think so. So actually, yeah, all these deer ever since that I've gotten with an archery season, I hunt with the back tension, no problem.
Gotcha. Yeah. And that's one thing that I never understood until I've had some conversations with some people, you know, over the last couple of years, and they're like, well, why practice with one thing and then go out and shoot your deer with another thing and, another release. And then, you know, eventually these guys are telling me that they switch to back tension, they shoot then like a thumb or a, you know, a trigger release, and then they ultimately go back and start hunting with their back tension release just because that's what they've practiced with all summer long.
Right, exactly. And that, I never liked that because that could be changing your anchor ever so slightly. Like, unless you could, there's a handful of releases that are basically identical, the thumb version and then the back tension version of that release. But if that's what you're using in deadly with all summer, yeah, I'd say stay with it. And I mean, with a back tension, I don't know if you've been trying it out yet enough, but if it was a desperation, you could, you know, intentionally get it to go up. That's, again, defeating the purpose a little, but it's not like you might miss it in case some catastrophic event happens. You can get it to go off, you know, with your hand, just get it to go off.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So did switching, I know you mentioned one specific example of a deer coming through. I mean, and your confidence started building up, you know, did that turn into direct success with getting more deer on the ground for you?
Yeah, it's funny. It seemed to have, really. And I don't know if it was because of my mentality that, like I said, that badass mentality I started carrying myself with. That probably did have something to do with it. You know, you just walk in with kind of all the confidence in the world, and it seemed to lead to success. Now, during that time, as I've been listening to more and more podcasts over the last few years, you know, the mobile hunting trend, it was like, as I'm hearing you guys talk about that, I'm like, wait, this is what I am doing already, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I always have my climbing tree stand, and it was like, but, you know, way back when, within the wooden tree stand days, it would be like, oh, there was a buck down at 100 yards. Oh, too bad. My stand's right here.
Yeah.
Like, for whatever reason, it was like not even like thought, like, here's my tree stand, this is where I sit, and that's all that's to it.
Yeah.
So
it sounds like,
you know,
your dad
learned.
It sounds like your dad had been doing that, and kind of that's how you were raised.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. I'm using my same API climber that I had way back then, even.
Yeah.
To this day.
It's funny because I remember going turkey hunting with a couple guys after I started turkey hunting, and they turkey hunted by sitting in a blind and waiting all day. And I did that one time, and I was like, I'm never going to do, like, unless I'm with my wife, I'm not going to do that. Because I was raised, I cut my teeth with my uncles who got me into turkey hunting. And that was call a little bit. And if they're not there, man, you go chase them and you go get them.
Yeah.
And you keep moving and moving and you run and gun throughout the timber all day, you know? And, of course, that's on big piece of public ground that we had access to. And, it's just one of those things where I don't know. Now that I look back at hunting, you know, I wish I was mobile when I started hunting back in the day, because it would have educated me on, you know, getting some encounters with some really big deer. I remember, I was probably 17 or 18 years old. Yeah, maybe even my first. Yeah, it was while I was in high school. And I remember watching this giant buck come out of a thicket, just like you, 100 yards down from where this tree stand was at. And every time he'd come out, I'd rattle at him. I'd call at him and all these things. And he'd look up and he kept walking. Look up, kept walking. If I knew then what I know now, I would have moved my tree stand down on this fence line and had a shot at him. And instead, I didn't know anything about it. And I just kind of watched this buck do his thing, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And even the piece I get to hunt, I'm fortunate to hunt a little piece of private up here in PA, about 80 acres. And it was each year, it's like one, the food chain goes as follows. It's number one, if there's acorns, you got to be in them. Number two is you got apples, they'll go to the apples. And then the last thing in line is just a cut hay field, basically grass and clover. But I started learning, like, each year those mass crops would be different.
Yeah.
So I'd have to move to where these deer were. They would change year to year.
Yeah.
You know, and that would come back to the scouting.
Yeah.
And for me, it was, I would have like my normal starting spots where I would hunt. And then I always like scouting on the way out, you know, during the season, because not if the acorns are all ate up in the first 2 weeks, you know what I mean? I gotta move elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I tell you what, man, it sounds like everything that's kind of happened to you has put you in position to be a really good killer throughout the years. And some of the pictures that you sent me, kind of solidify that. Now, one thing I want to ask, being a Pennsylvania resident, you know, there's been some talk recently about, and this is something I've never really talked with anybody about adding Sunday hunting, right? I guess currently in Pennsylvania, you can't hunt Sundays, or did that law pass?
Nope. We still cannot hunt Sundays. And a lot of guys are going to relate to what I'm about to say. Last year, in archery season, those 6 weeks, it seemed like every Saturday was like rain, major wind, super warm. And then that Sunday would come and it would be here, the high pressure, little to no wind, you know, perfect temp. And then here we are just sitting here looking out the window on Sundays, you know?
Right. So let me ask you this. Why did Pennsylvania ban hunting on Sundays all those years ago?
I'm pretty sure it has ties into religious reasons, Sunday being the, you know, God's day off, if you will.
Right.
But also, the game commission might say that it has to do with maybe keeping the game a day of rest, actually, believe it or not.
Right. Absolutely. You would think that would be on Monday when everybody would go back to work.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
Huh. Anyway.
But as far as Sunday hunting goes, I'm obviously for that. Give us the option. You know, like I told you, the days I work, sometimes I do come in on an half day. I get Saturdays only, you know?
Right.
A lot of guys only getting one day because they're, you know, working guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So has there been so much, like, momentum and pressure from hunters to the state saying, hey man, we want to hunt Sundays? And is that how this law kind of is just, you know, a whole bunch of hunters banding together, organizations banding together and saying, hey man, we want to hunt Sundays, and they just have pressured the state into introducing this new legislation?
Yeah, for sure. I know it's passed a lot of the preliminary stages. It has passed. I think the final ruling on that will actually be coming very, very soon. But I know there's a page on Facebook supporting Sunday hunting, and I support that page, and they have a pretty massive following. So it's hunters getting together in PA and surrounding states, putting the pressure on legislators, and it really looks like it's going to get done, which is excellent news.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you think of it this way, too. Obviously, it's going to allow more people to spend time in the woods, right? More money is going to be spent on gas. More money is going to be spent on food. More money is going to be spent throughout the entire state on, you know, hunters going from their homes to the woods, right? You know, and I think it's just going to be beneficial for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, no question. And a lot of, you know, in PA, it's the PA Game Commission. I mean, more funds are going to help everybody.
Right.
Biological studies, law enforcement, the whole nine yards. I mean, why not?
Yep, absolutely, man. Absolutely. Well, I tell you what, man, thanks for taking time to hop on the podcast with me and chat today. We have about one time. We have about time for one kick-ass story from you, and I want you to share the first one that comes to your head. Maybe not about the biggest buck you've ever shot. It doesn't have to be bow, doesn't have to be rifle, whatever. Just one memory of something throughout your entire hunting career that sticks out that the listeners might like to hear.
I'll give my last archery kill. Is a real super nice eight pointer, maybe in the mid 120s. I was struggling the whole season of archery. It was going into about the fourth week of the season, in and around that Halloween, kind of the magic day up our way. And, man, not seeing any deer, not seeing anything. And I said to myself, I was sitting on a Sunday, of course, not hunting. And I'm like, I got to figure this out, man. What are these deer doing, man? What's happening here? I was hunting all my normal spots in and on. I kind of went to a spot where it was, you know, kind of a forgotten spot. It was down lower than they normally cross this creek in a particular area. And I found the remnants of a pretty fresh scrape. So I'm like, you know what? This looks pretty good. I texted my buddy. I'm like, you know, I think I'm onto something here. I think I'm definitely onto a spot here. So that Wednesday came up. I slipped in there in the evening. My dad was up above me, but he still bow hunts to this day with me, which is awesome. But he was about 150 yards up, and it was getting dark. He called me on the cell phone. He's like, I think I'm going to get down. I'm like, Dad, there's still a little time. We still got a little daylight left, man. I definitely have a feeling. Hang tight. So I'm sitting, all of a sudden I look back, coming up from west of me, from down below. I just see this tanker of a body coming up through. I go, oh man, it's going to happen. Problem is, I need him to get here in shooting light. So I'm looking back. I get turned around. I get set up. He's coming up broadside. And I'm like, now when I get in there, I'll range trees all around me. Now I'm good at judging yardage from my 3D experience, but if you got a rangefinder, use it. I mean, obviously. So I had spots picked, and there was a log laying sideways down, and I knew that was about 40 yards. So the buck's coming up, and I'm like, oh, please. You know, a lot of guys can relate to this one, too. Like, you're just wait, like, get here in enough daylight, legal shooting hour, please. He comes up, and as soon as that goes by in the tree, I pull back, and I'm like, as I'm at full draw looking through the housing, the sight housing, I'm like, wait a minute, he's behind that log. So it's about 45-yard shot. He comes out, and I just put it on there, man. And I'm like, just pull back, pull through, stay with your sequence. Breaks off. I hear that loud crack, and he goes up running. He does a little half moon, and then he stops. So now I'm watching him about 90 yards stopped. I can see him wobbling, but as he's standing there, it's getting way too dark, and all of a sudden, I don't see him, and now it is totally dark. So I'm like, okay, I know I smoked him. The shot felt great. Little bit of I know my dad had gotten down, and it was coming down towards me. So he's calling me up. He goes, Jess, what'd you shoot? Bigfoot, man, just crashing through the woods. He was ground level when the situation was happening because the deer went up in between me and him. He's like, what just happened, man? I go, just like that, Dad. I just talked, but all of a sudden, it just happened so quickly, man. But I think I smoked him. So he comes to me, and I climb down. I'm in my climber, and we just gather our thoughts for a few minutes. I'm like, Dad, if you were coming down, you didn't bounce him or see him going. This was all looking real good here. So we ease on up with the flashlights where I hit him, and there's the blood trail, like just outstanding. I'm like, this looks like a hard shot, even that. Like, it looked that good. So we're tracking him around, and man, there he was, right where I seen him last. It was really amazing experience, and I still got to enjoy that with my dad. He's in his mid-60s, and even this past year, we doubled up again. That was the last.
Awesome.
Yeah, we doubled it up. It came down the rifle this year. You know, I had a lot. I seen a lot of bucks, good bucks in archery, but I like hunting my way into my best spots, and I was just a hair off, man. I'm getting one in the bow, but we both got it done in rifle, and I hope everybody got to enjoy that story.
Yeah, awesome, man. Well, thanks for taking time to hop on the podcast, man. Really appreciate it. Sounds like you've had a great hunting career so far. It makes you happy, and it makes allows you to spend some time with the people that you love. And good luck to the upcoming seasons as well, man.
All right, yeah, you too, man. Good luck, Dan. Thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I'd love to stop in if you ever want to do it again, man.
That's how you do a podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Huge shout out to Jesse, man. Really appreciate your time. Huge shout out to all of you for taking time to download the podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the Sportsman's Nation Whitetail feed. Be sure to subscribe to the Sportsman's Nation Big Game feed and all of the podcasts on the Sportsman's Nation, as well as the Nine Finger Chronicles. You know, I can't forget myself here, right? Huge shout out to all the partners of the podcast. Lone Wolf, Wasp, Ripcord, Ozonix, Prime, and Hunter Safety Systems. Guys, please go out and support the companies that support this podcast. I'm telling you right now, these companies are going to be doing some giveaways with me later on this summer. I want you all to pay attention and keep an ear out for that. All right, so there's that. I think we're good to go. If you're not following me on social media, please do that. Instagram, Facebook, Nine Finger Chronicle, Sportsman's Nation, blah, 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 blah. If you're going to be in a tree, our friends at Hunter Safety Systems are reminding us to please wear your damn safety harness. Have a good rest of the week.